Welcome, everybody. I am Nadine. I do live in Montana, and I'm so grateful to be in Montana. I married into the West. I'm from Cleveland originally. I am a grateful recovering compulsive overeater, and I'm abstinent today. And thank you for having me speak. It's really been a pleasure, and I really feel humbled when I'm asked to speak. At an OA birthday party a few years ago, I was in a room, there was some speakers from A Vision for You, and the one girl described us so perfectly, I thought, and she said, "We in OA are a group of people sick in nature that found a solution that works entirely." And I so related to that because I'm not a bad person trying to get better, which I always felt like I was, but I'm a sick person trying to get well. I'm sick in nature, but I found a solution that works entirely. And I'm so grateful. Sharing my story reminds me how far I've come. And also it reminds me of the work I have yet to do. And I love the saying that says, "I haven't come this far only to come this far." And it just reminds me in a way that I do need to be constantly growing. I love listening to old timers speak, and they'll say, "I do today, what works for me is I do today what I did in the very beginning of my recovery." So to keep growing and changing, they do the basics and they do it every day. And I loved that. And I love reading in Voices of Recovery said, "I have to continue this journey one day at a time to keep moving forward in recovery. Why? If I'm to remain spiritually awake and fully alive." And I want to be spiritually awake and I want to be fully alive and I want to live with intention. And that's what this OA journey does for me. In my story, I love to, you know, start what I was like and then I fast forward and then I go back and then I go to the middle. So you're on this wild journey with me. So I want to let you know that I don't remember a time in my life that I didn't look to food to comfort me. The thoughts of food, of compulsive eating, of binging, of dieting, of hating myself, of, "Oh, my clothes are too fat, too tight, and I feel too fat. And if only, were constant thoughts that went with me. And for decades, it was how I dealt with my life, turning to food. Every emotion, I would get like, feel bad about myself. I shouldn't have said this. I'm a terrible mother. And all of a sudden I had to have some chocolate to calm me down. I had to like bury my face in a bucket of ice cream. And I remember now fast forwarding to my first OA meeting, and I was out of answers. I was grieving my daddy had passed away and, you know, grieving that and some sadness around his death. I had a daughter in high school that was very high maintenance, and I was running around trying to control her life. And you can imagine how well that worked. I had a work, was at a level of stress I had never known. And I would come home from work despite my best intentions, and like a heat-seeking missile, I would go right to the fridge and bury my face in the fridge. And I couldn't stop eating. I was desperate. I was out of answers. And, you know, I was hopeless. And it turns out hopeless is a really good place to be coming into this program. When we're hopeless, you know, I was willing to do anything. Help me, toss me something that will help. And when I went to my first OA meeting that weekend, I found this place by my house, and it was an old dusty church. And there was only one OA person there. And you know, I was so desperate, and I never thought to myself, "Ooh, this church is kind of old and dusty," or, "Why is there just one person here? This must be a defunct organization." I never thought that. I needed hope. And there was one person there to give me a little bit of hope, to know that I wouldn't have to always feel this way or be like this. Now, I never imagined I could have neutrality around food or be relieved of the obsession, but I was hoping I could live a little bit better, that I wouldn't be so crazy with this food. And you know, I got that day. I got the hope I needed at that one meeting. And I like to remember that now when I'm sitting in meetings, and maybe they're a little lifeless, maybe they're a little dull, and maybe and there's newcomers in the room, and I think, we got to zip this up. We got to like tell our stories with enthusiasm and energy so they know how great this program is. And that leader better get with it. And I think all these things sitting in the rooms, and I have to remind myself, I say to myself, Nadine, calm down. They don't need bells and whistles. They don't need a perfect meeting. They just need hope. And so I always want to be prepared to share that hope that's within me. And I think there's no greater compliment after a meeting than to hear a newcomer say, I have hope now. Because that's how I felt. And it meant the world. So when I was about 12, I remember clearly being caught up in a world of dieting. I remember bringing the hard-boiled eggs to school and drinking all the water and not liking my body and comparing myself to other people. Because if you were thinner than me, then somehow you were better than me. And I remember in high school, I was selling chocolate bars. And I remember about 4 o'clock and I'd have this big box of chocolate bars to sell and I'd be so hungry. And so you'd eat this whole big chocolate bar. I feel like during that time I set up I won't eat tomorrow. I kind of set up a habit of I blew it today, so I'll just binge the rest of the day and be really good tomorrow. Now that was preceded by not liking my body and comparing myself. And then I'm in this habit of, well, I blew it today. And it started this whole cycle of the binging, the compulsive eating, the hating myself even worse. You know, my mother at that time would refer to people in the shape of their body. Now, I want to tell you that my mother is 94 years old and still talks like this. She doesn't mean to be mean. This is just how she talks. And so she'll say, oh, look at her. Oh, she's gained some weight since I saw her last time. Or look at him. Oh, he's kind of got a pot belly on him. Or doesn't she look good? She's so thin. Oh, she looks lovely. And I would hear that a lot. I hear it now a lot. And what I got from that was the shape of your body determines your worth, that you're somehow more worthy and better if you're thin. Being thin is an acceptable way to be. And I remember one day, 11, she put her hand on my hip and said, just right there, honey, that's the only place you need to lose weight. And I've hated my hips ever since. Isn't it amazing how one comment can just, you can carry it with you for life. And it's so interesting because right now I'm doing, it's the body image of men's worksheets that's in the back of our OA region binder from last year. And it's 4 pages and a sponsee wanted to do it with me. And I feel like I'm really recovered from hating my hips, but there's some work to do. I mean, it's so good, that body image of man's worksheet. It's 4 pages and her and I are just getting so much out of it. But it's interesting to me that that subject keeps coming up. When I was 11 or 12 is when it began. And so, you know, I always ask myself, why did I feel like this? Why did I feel the need to compare? Why did I feel fat at 11? Was it because, you know, how my mother was, you know, and my mother really has anorexic tendencies? Was it, you know, from the first to the eighth grade, I went to St. Felicitas and was taught by the nuns who, when I came out of there, I felt, you're bad, you're a sinner, you're bad. And the joke used to be that I blamed everything on the nuns. It's because of those nuns, but I don't do that today. They were doing the best they could, but I did come out of there feeling bad about who I was. Is that why I'm compulsively eating? Is it because, what is it? My parents were divorced. I'm a middle child and, you know, my voice isn't heard. And I love in the big book where it says, you know, the reasons for the illness are unimportant. What's important is that there's a proven workable method that can arrest our illness. And I know that other things, shameful things in my life, I can analyze to death. And I don't need to make light of them, but what's important is there's a proven workable method that can help me with them. And I love in the big book where it says self-knowledge avails us nothing. I can understand why I'm like this, how I'm like this, till I'm blue in the face. But the power to change comes from a higher power I'll call God. And the power from it, so the power comes from working those steps and having had a spiritual awakening. And the knowledge is good, but the power to change, only God can change that within me. So for decades, I couldn't be happy with myself unless I was thin. I had to be thin to have a voice. And it was, if I was only smart enough, if I was only a better wife, a better mother, a better friend. And I was never enough. My core addiction is that I'm not enough. And so, of course, I would eat. And, you know, I don't even need to tell you the immediate disgust with yourself waking up in the morning. And my first thought was like, what did I do with food yesterday? Oh, I binged. And how you feel so helpless, that demoralizing feeling that one more time I have to get out of bed and try again and do the things and drink the water and exercise and to try to make it through the day. And I would punish myself, and I would have tight clothes on, and I would say, you wear those clothes because you don't deserve to have other clothes, because then you'll stop eating, you know. And has ever guilt and shaming someone into something ever worked? I don't know. It certainly doesn't work for me. But in my life, it was 40 plus years of all of this, of dieting, binging, hating myself. I was in a wilderness. I was in a mental prison. I was so, felt so degraded, and I did it to myself. You know, and along with that food addiction, along with that is I needed people to validate me. You know, what you thought about me made a big difference. And if you were mad at me, I would do anything so you wouldn't be mad at me. It was like, it didn't matter how I felt. As long as you were fine, I was okay. Or so I thought. So, you know, when I came in, I was all of these things. I was bereft of confidence. I was needing you to validate me. I was binging and dieting and hating my body. And above all, I felt ashamed before God, because for the millionth time, I would apologize to God. Oh, I'm so sorry that I binged again, and I'll try to do better. And it's such a sad place to be. It's such a sad place to be. And the lies that I would constantly tell myself, you know, those lies that sneak in, this disease is so sneaky when you're doing well, and oh, you're doing good, so you can eat this, or oh, you know, just one bite, or here's a good one. I just want a little warm oatmeal cookie, and it's oatmeal, you know, so I'm going to make some cookies in the afternoon, and then I'm just going to have one warm one when it comes out of the oven. Now that's the lie, because what happens? You binge on the batter, you binge on the cookies, you sit down, you have cookies, and then the family comes in, and then it's dinner time. And so you binge on dinner because now you've binged on cookies. And then I'm comatose on the sofa because I've eaten so much, not present for anyone or anything around me. That's what really happens. But the lie is, I'm just going to have a warm oatmeal cookie. And that just sounds so right and good and all American. So it's those lies that sneak in. So I came to OA, and I want to tell you that I found relief. I found a bit of relief, and I went to a workshop, and I was on that pink cloud of happiness, of like, wow. And I was relating to other people, not feeling so alone. And I don't know what happened, but I went on vacation, came back, and all of a sudden, because I felt a little bit better and a little bit of recovery, I didn't feel like I was quite so bad. I didn't feel like I was this hopeless compulsive eater. I felt like some days I just have a little problem with food. And I kept coming to OA, but then, you know, I'd have good days with food and bad days with food. And I was part of the fellowship for sure, but I wasn't part of the recovery. And very few people around me were sponsoring, and I didn't see a lot of recovery around me. And I just thought, this is as good as it's going to get for me. peace sometimes with food, feel okay about myself sometimes. And I just got to white knuckle it, I guess. And then after a time, I thought, you know, this isn't working for me. I am not doing this anymore. This just isn't working for me. And I'm so grateful that I didn't leave until the miracle happened, because what happened is a gal moved to town and she had long-term abstinence, strong recovery, and she loved the big book. And I saw her sponsor people and I saw people starting to recover. I saw people being relieved of the obsession. And this one young gal, I saw that happen to her and I was like, wow. And so what's the first question I ask her? After I've been in OA for a while, the first question I ask her is, oh, what are you eating? Like I don't, like, it's, you know, it's about the food. So it's not about the food, but you know, that was the first question I asked her because that was the most important thing. But I asked that gal who moved to town to be my sponsor, and she was strict. And I was so related to that because it reminded me of the nuns. I don't know, but I did what I was afraid not to do what she asked me to do. And I worked these steps quickly. And I was like, okay, what do I have to do next? And every night I'd have an assignment. And I remember sitting in a coffee shop with her because I'm all about being in coffee shops. And I did my fifth step with her. And it was, I got relieved very quickly. And I started sponsoring right away because she told me to. And it was just amazing how that could be lifted, how you can tell someone all those things you are embarrassed about and how the peace that it can bring. But not only that, and the most important thing is the spiritual awakening. So, you know, in the beginning, when I had half measures and I would share how I was in OA and what was helping me, and I would say, oh yeah, and God helped me. It's like I threw God in it as an afterthought at the end. And now it's not about that at all. Now it's all about a spiritual experience. So I love that OA, not a religious program, but a spiritual one. I love that OA connects me to God in a way that I never thought possible. And it is nothing. It's like none of this have I not heard sitting in a church pew. You know, bring God into your day, pray at all times. God can answer all your problems. I've heard that sitting in a church pew year after year after year. But what OA did was help clear away the wreckage, unclog the tube from my head to my heart. So I could really hear God talking to me.
And you have about 2 minutes, Nadine.
That's not possible, and that's not going to work for me. I'll talk real fast now. A real aha moment came.
We'll give you five.
All right, you call me out, Leslie. A real aha moment came for me when just one day I was at an OA function, and it just hit me. It was like, oh my God, God isn't judging me. It's me judging me. All these years, it was me doing it to me. It wasn't God doing it to me. I didn't need to feel guilty. God is a gentle God in my life. It's a God that says, it's okay, Nadine. Tomorrow, we're going to try better. Tomorrow, we're going to try to do that better. I want to be on my side today. No matter what I've said, no matter what I've done, no matter what I've eaten, I am through disparaging myself, of saying that I'm not enough, of wishing things were different. I listened to an OA meeting this gal shared, and she was having a bad day, and she was mad at herself for something that she did. And so she was telling her sponsor, and her sponsor said to her, for goodness sake, give yourself a B and move on. And I loved that so much. Like, I give myself a B and move on. I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to sit in, oh, why did I have that extra bit of food? Or why did I say that? Or, oh my gosh, I don't do that to myself anymore. It's a huge part of my program. It's a huge part of my spiritual awakening that God has shown me. That is not you. You are not this unworthy, lowly person that doesn't even know your own opinion. You are lovely, and you are worth it. And it's okay. So, you know, I want to be on my side today. And that's really, really important. And so when those negative thoughts come, I like say out loud, I'll be at home and I'll go, that is such a lie. I am not like that. Just repeat the truth of what I know to be true in my life. All right, girls, I'm skipping over a lot of this because I know I've got all my notes, so I'm just skipping over. So my problem isn't food. My problem is I have a body that can't tolerate it. I have an allergy to certain foods. I have a mind that can't quit thinking about it. So food was my solution, I thought, to my problem. And it was my answer for a long, long time until it wasn't. You know, it's about the food until it is not about the food at all. And we don't even talk about the food so much in meetings. You don't even hear it. You hear recovery. You hear, this is what I did. Recently, I was talking to a friend about, I did a 10th step because I was mad at my daughter because of certain things. And so then I worked through it. And I was talking to an OA friend later in the day, and how you doing? I go, well, I'm doing good. I feel free. I had a resentment, but I did the 10th step. I feel free. And she said, aren't we lucky that we have a program that shows us how to live, that gives us a roadmap to life? And I thought, wow, yes. I would have never related my compulsive eating, my binging to being, aren't we lucky? Aren't I lucky? But isn't this thing that was the very bane of my existence, hasn't it become the very jewel of my life, the thing that God uses in me to share with others and to help others? This isn't the way I would have wanted it. I mean, let me go to Africa and dig a well and get fresh water for people. Let me do something noteworthy, not be a compulsive eater. But it is the very thing that God uses in my life to help other people to live purposefully. To know that this works, that there's freedom. I love the word neutrality. There is neutrality around food that I never thought possible. I've got some props. Oh, well, you know, it's just kind of my thing because I don't have before and after pictures to really show you. So, you know, I'm down probably 30, 40 pounds from my very top weight. But, you know, even 30 pounds, you can fit in the same yoga pants. I'm telling you, I don't have before and after, but I have pictures of my brain. I hope this comes through. So this is my brain on binging, pulling my hair out. I'm all angry and red and I'm disparaged and I feel awful. And this is the reason why I'm feeling like that. Chunky monkey, burying my face in a bucket of ice cream. And the hammer is because I would beat myself. And I tell myself now, a hammer is not a tool of recovery, but I beat myself about how worthless I was. And then this is my brain now. It's all pink and happy and lit up, light. It's light. I'm not carrying around the bondage of the binging. And this is why, because I have love for myself. I love for all of you and love for God. So I hope those came through. I always like to share that. You know, in the AA book, there's so much good stuff, but there's a story in there that says AA taught him how to handle sobriety. And, you know, he says things like, there's no great trick in putting down the food, I'll say. There's no great trick. The trick is not picking it back up. And these 12 steps show us the trick. What's the trick? Well, the trick is the 12 steps. The trick is a connection to God. And in that story, he says at the end, for at last, I was at peace with myself. I was at peace with God, and I was at peace with others. And I love that story because I don't know any greater way to be. I don't know any better way to be than to be at peace with myself, to be at peace with my body, to be at peace with my food. And that's what this program does. So I like to say there's magic in these steps. And the magic is me accepting God is in charge. And that's the magic. The God's in charge, not me. And gosh, so much more. I printed out, I practiced my speech and then I printed it out and I had this big font. So it printed out 11 pages and I'm like, holy cow. And I didn't want to waste any more ink and print more. So I have 11 pages of things I wanted to tell you about my program and how I work it. Not that I'm so wonderful or need you to validate me, but just what has helped me. So
I have a question for you.
Good. Maybe. Good, Leslie.
How has service fit into your recovery?
So it makes a huge difference. And here's a small part that makes a huge difference, and I'll tell you. So my home meeting is a Saturday morning, 7 a.m. meeting here in Montana. And it's our largest meeting. And 1 week, you know, 7 a.m., I got up. I wasn't feeling, I didn't want to sign on, and I didn't want to comb my hair. But for service, I had committed, my sponsee was leading the meeting and she had brought in a special speaker and I was committed. I wanted to be there for her and I wanted to be there for myself, but part of service, I have sponsees and I want to support them. So I showed up for that meeting on a Saturday morning. And after that, my whole weekend was fabulous. Was it because of that meeting? Well, had I not agreed to be on it, might have made a difference. The following Saturday was the same thing. I had the same attitude, but I had promised another OA fellow that I would give this message because she couldn't be there about world service. And so I had to sign on even though I didn't feel like it. So that's just a small part of being accountable to someone, keeps you showing up. You know, I have sponsees and when I ask them to do something like this body image amends worksheet that I'm doing with one, we do it together. You know, I have, I'm working through the 12-step workbook. That's just so great. So I'm constantly have my nose in OA or AA literature. So I'm the member at large on the board of Region 1. And there, you know, I check with other intergroups. I'm liaison. I do different things. And that keeps me accountable. You know, I call other intergroups. How are you guys doing? You know, it keeps me accountable. I'm being a sponsor and having a sponsor, I think, is the biggest deal. And that's the biggest service commitment that I have, the accountability to my sponsor and to having sponsees. That's all I can think of for now, Leslie.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Do we have anyone else that would like to share a comment or ask a question? We have 2 or 3 minutes. Wow, there's a lot of us here. Wendy, would you like to share again?
No, I have a question, Ashley, for Nadine. Thank you for coming and sharing this morning. Really, really nice story. You said you had some pages about how you work your program. How did you come to terms with step 2 and 3?
Well, I've always felt I had God in my life, went to church my whole life, so came to believe that a power greater than myself was no big stretch for me. But you know how if we had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but that didn't cure us, it says in the big book. So when I was told to read the chapter We Agnostics, I said, I don't need to read that chapter. I'm not agnostic. I have God, and this chapter isn't going to tell me anything I don't know about a relationship with God. And how wrong I was. And so, you know, the sentence, God is everything or is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? It was a shift in my thinking, and it was a gradual shift in my thinking, and it was all related to the less I was disparaging to myself, the more I started to be gentle with myself, the more my relationship with God was gentle and caring. So when I felt better about who I was, I felt better about how God viewed me and my relationship with God, and that I could talk to God more. It was the most interesting thing, how when I'm feeling ugly and awful, I feel like God's thinking that, or I used to. And now, even when I think that, I go, that is not how God views me. It's more of a gentler, loving, compassionate God. So I think the biggest thing that I struggled with was, so that was, you know, in step one, when it says, we admit our life is we believe we're powerless and that our life is unmanageable. And knowing that I was powerless actually helped me take a sigh of relief, because I felt like I was just weak-willed, awful. And now I realized I wasn't, but I was powerless, but that my life was unmanageable. I thought, really? You know, I have this good job and this nice husband, and I got all this love around me, and I'm Italian, and my family knows how to show love. We're Italian. But then I realized, working the steps, really, was my life so wonderful? Or was I people-pleasing my way through it? Was my job so overwhelming? It's because I couldn't say no to any one client, and because I wanted them to think I was great. And how honest is that? And so it was really showing me really helping me see the unmanageability of my life beyond the food. It's not that if I could just get the food and the weight under control, I would be just fine. It was seeing how my life was unmanageable in every area. And then the relationship with God that started to develop as I worked the steps. Mm-hmm. Thank you.